Hi, I'm Jay Sherbrooke, DO, family physician and professor in the primary care department at Toro University, California. Welcome to our series on practical use of insulin in primary care. Today, I'm happy to tell you that I'm talking to Neil Skolnick, MD, family physician and associate residency director at Abington Jefferson Health. Our topic today will be talking about GLP-1 receptor agonists. Are they insulin? Are they not insulin? And how can they be used either in place or in combination with insulin? Neil, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jay. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you. So, you know, it gets complicated. We have lots of different choices for medicines today. We have many, many oral medicines, and now what we used to think of injections, we always thought of insulin. But now we have injectable therapies that are not insulin. So when you're introducing insulin or the other class, the GLP-1 receptor agonist, how do you talk to patients and let them know that this is not insulin?
Well, I think in many ways, Jay, talking to patients is the easier part of the equation. The harder part is for those of us in primary care who are so used to using insulin as our first injectable, understanding the place of the GLP-1 receptor agonist. So let's start there if you don't mind. Because the GLP-1s are a class of agents that really allow the body to use its own insulin maximally. So GLP-1s work on decreasing gastric or slowing gastric emptying. They are a glucose-dependent initiator of the body's own insulin release. What that means so importantly is that one of their characteristics is that they have a low incidence of hypoglycemia, which is one of the Achilles heels of traditional insulin use. The other thing is they work on the brain's satiety center, and so they decrease our drive for food. That and slowing of gastric emptying leads to its other main very positive characteristic, which is weight loss, which is in contrast to the weight gain that we typically see with insulin. The other thing that our audience should be aware of is that when we compare A1C efficacy to basal insulin, it has about the same or even a little better efficacy in lowering A1C than basal insulin. So it really is a wonderful non-insulin option as first injectable, because as opposed to insulin, which works well but has a high amount of hypoglycemia attached to it along with weight gain, which for most people is undesirable, the GLP-1s have excellent efficacy, similar in that way to insulin, but have a very low incidence of hypoglycemia and cause weight loss instead of weight gain. So when you explain that to patients, and we all talk to patients in different ways and use language because we know the patient that fits for them so that they'd understand that, so that when we talk to patients, it really becomes a very attractive option for patients, particularly with regard to the decreased incidence of hypoglycemia. And let's face it, we are all, our patients are all concerned about weight because we've been telling them for years to try to take off weight, and they'd rather have a medicine that helps them do that rather than insulin, which puts on weight. Does that make sense, Jay?
It does. So it sounds like it's as good as insulin, but it has weight loss and has lower risk of hypoglycemia.
That's right. Now, to be fair, I always explain that you never get something for nothing. And one of the side effects of the GLP-1s is increased GI symptoms, some nausea, some GI discomfort. So that diminishes after a couple of months of use, but there's a significant number of patients who, you know, a small number of patients who don't tolerate the GLP-1s. And if it's like any medicine, if it's not right for them, then it is not the right medicine for them. So that's the challenge with regard to GLP-1 use.
So these are really important points. You've talked about both the benefits and the potential side effects to GLP-1s. So they sound like they're really an important part of diabetes treatment. Why do I need to use insulin?
Well, another good question, Jay. So that as patients move on in the diabetes continuum, as they've had diabetes for more and more years, they have less and less insulin-secreting ability left in their pancreas, in their beta cells. So eventually, you're going to get to a point where you do need to use external insulin. Now, that said, that's a while down the road if you choose to use a GLP-1 after two or three oral agents. But at some point, the body will need additional insulin.
And now I'm hearing that these medicines can be used in combination. Do you use them together, or do you have to pick one or the other?
So that's a good question, Jay. And I had the wonderful opportunity to actually present to the FDA as part of the presentation for one of the combination agents on the lay of the landscape in diabetes. And one of the interesting things is that we tend to wait too long after two or three oral agents. There's an average of a 7-year delay until starting insulin. The other thing that's interesting is that on basal insulin alone, over half of all patients are not controlled to goal. So combination therapy with a GLP-1 and a basal insulin, of which there have recently been two approved by the FDA, allows the opportunity to have greater efficacy than you do with either one of those agents alone. But what's remarkable about it is that unlike traditional combination therapies that we are used to in hypertension, say, or in treatment of COPD or asthma, you actually don't get both side effects to the same. The side effects are not additive, and actually the medicines, when used together, mitigate the side effects of each of the two components. So with the combination GLP-1 basal insulins, you get less weight gain than you do with insulin, and you get equal A1C efficacy, and you get no more hypoglycemia, even though you get better efficacy. In addition, when compared to a GLP-1 alone, you have less GI side effects, primarily because of the way it's titrated up. So you have less GI side effects on the one side, you have less weight gain, sometimes weight loss on the other end, and better efficacy, but the same amount of hypoglycemia. So they really offer a wonderful option for patients who are not controlled on either basal insulin or GLP-1 alone.
So I heard you say that I can use insulin and a GLP-1 together. I can use them as separate products, but I've also heard you say that there are now a couple products that are in a single injection?
That's right. So that both of these combination GLP-1 insulins were approved by the FDA just this past December. So we're currently talking, it's January. This is only a little over a month ago that they were FDA approved. And it's nice because we know that one of the issues for patients is the complexity of their diabetes regimen. Patients are on medicines for diabetes, often 2-3 or more medicines for their diabetes, but typically they're also on some medicines for their high blood pressure or a medicine for their hypercholesterolemia. So these are complex regimens. Anything that makes life simpler for our patients, I think, is good for us. It hopefully will make it easier for us to advance therapy, thereby decreasing therapeutic inertia, that delay I talked about between when we think about starting a medicine or need to when someone isn't at goal and when we actually start a medicine. And hopefully it'll make it easier for patients to titrate up to goal.
So it sounds like these GLP-1 receptor agonists are a good alternative and or complement to insulin. Sounds like these new combination products really have the opportunity to maybe make medicine simpler. We'll certainly have to see what they cost, but pay attention. These GLP-1s are around to stay, and they might add some help to us and our patients with insulin. Thank you.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.